All right. Good morning, everyone.
Let's begin. So we're going to focus in Me'aretz Hashem a little bit this morning on the topic of Purim. I know that that this is a Tehillim class, but I figure like this. The class focus is on a relationship with Hashem. Tehillim is about Hashem. Purim is about Hashem. So that's enough of a common denominator for all of us. A little creative. So our shir this morning is dedicated by Blimi Mushel and Shady Kelman in memory of Daryl Zaslow, David Ben Hertz Halevi, Zichron Livracha. May his neshama have an aliyah and his family in the Chama. So let's begin. We start with number one. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, I'm Rabbi Yoshua ben Karchos. There's an amazing Gemara in Maseches Megillah. And the Gemara says the following. The Gemara is actually talking about the concept of Hallel on Purim. So the Gemara says, Uma me'avdus l'cheirus aminan shira, mimisa l'chaim l'kol shikin. So the Gemara says, if we say Hallel on Pesach, Pesach, of course, being a Yom Tov that celebrates our redemption from servitude to freedom. So from servitude to freedom, we go ahead and we say Hallel. Mimisa l'chayim l'kol shekin. So of course, again, when it comes to a salvation from death, of course, we're going to say Hallel as well. So Gemara says a very simple idea. If again, on a Yom Tov that celebrates redemption from servitude to freedom, where we know that again, under Paro's tyrannical rule for 210 years, there wasn't a quote-unquote threat to life. Now true, there was a period of time where Paro said, to throw every baby boy into the Nile. That was not an ongoing decree. That was a decree that was levied upon the Jewish people for a particular amount of time. But under normal circumstances, there was not a threat to Jewish life. There was oppression, there was servitude, there was slavery, but there was no threat to life. So if upon Pesach, we go ahead and we say Hallel, then Purim, where there was a threat to life, remember again, Purim, the decree. Tanya, I appreciate you. You're so excited. Baruch Hashem. Good. Good. People always ask me on the recordings, who is that lady who gets so excited? I tell them, Tanya Shechman. So the Gemara says, therefore, when it comes to Purim, where there was the Gzeri, the decree of Haman, was Lahashmid, Larog, Ula'abed, to destroy every single Jewish man, woman, and child. So, of course, there should be an obligation to say Hallel. To which the Gemara says, Ihachi, Hallel Nami Nima, we should say Hallel on Purim. But there's only one problem, which is, we don't say Hallel on Purim. An incredible, incredible tefillah prayer anomaly. We do not say Hallel on Purim. In fact, Purim is the only Yom Tov on which we do not go ahead and say Hallel. To which the Gemara says, so why not? Why don't we say Hallel on Purim? Ihachi Hallel Nami Nima. So the Gemara gives three answers. Answer number one, Lefi Shein Omrim Halal Anes Shebachut Salaretz. Answer number one is because we do not say Halal for miracles that occurred outside of the land of Israel. Purim, of course, occurred outside the land of Israel. Therefore, no Halal. There's only one problem with that. Says the Gemara, well, if that's the case, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Denes Shebachut Salaretz, Hechi Amrinan Shira. But one second, the Exodus, right? Pesach occurred outside of the land of Israel. So how do we say Halal for Pesach? To which the Gemara gives an interesting answer. The Gemara says, that rule that you only say Hallel on miracles that occur in the land of Israel only got on the books after we entered the land of Israel. In other words, that remember Pesach, essentially what the Gemara is really answering is, Pesach was the beginning of it all. There were no rules. It was the beginning of the Judaic experience. So Pesach occurs outside the land of Israel, there's Hallel, but once we as a people enter into the land, solidify our relationship with the land, Hallel is a prayer that is only said about miracles that occur in the land of Israel. By the way, of course, Pesach is not the only exception to this rule. Shavuos is the exception to this rule. Sukkot is the exception to this rule. All the primary regalim occur regarding events that preceded entry into the land of Israel. But essentially, the Gemara is saying is the following. Once we enter into the land of Israel, any subsequent holidays on which Hallel will be recited have to be holidays that occurred on the soil of Eretz Yisrael, which of course, for our purposes, only goes ahead and includes what holiday? Chanukah, although again, without getting hashkafically or religiously controversial, right? In the religious Zionist community, this would also include days like Yom HaAtzmaut, like Yom Yerushalayim, which again, not our topics for today, but again, even the concept of where it comes from that one could say Hallel on days like this, leaving aside how you feel about the establishment of the state, of the reunification of Yerushalayim, but the fact that such a conversation could get started regarding those days is because they are events that occurred on the soil of Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, says the Gemara, because Purim, as miraculous and as incredible as it was, happened outside the land of Israel, no Hallel. That's answer number one. Answer number two, Rav Nachman Amar, last two lines of number one, Kriyasa Zuhilula, Halela. So the Gemara gives a very interesting answer, the second answer, which is we don't say Hallel on Purim because we have the Megillah. And the Megillah effectively takes the place of Hallel, which of course is an incredibly fascinating answer because they're two dramatically different texts. Meaning again, Hallel is a supplicatory, jubilant prayer that is filled with praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, requests of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whereas the Megillah is a story. But nevertheless, the Gemara understands that embedded in that story is the miraculous salvation of the Jewish people, orchestrated by God, and as such, we don't recite Hallel on Purim because we have the Megillah instead. And answer number three, Rava says, Bishlama hasam halalu avde Hashem velo avde paro. So the Gemara says something very interesting. In order to recite Hallel, the criteria for Hallel is one phrase. You have to be able to say halalu avde Hashem, which is the opening line in one of the paragraphs of Hallel. Hallel is sung when we as a people can say we are the servants of God. What does that mean? We're always the servants of God. What it means is that we're the servants of God and not the servants of another human master. So for example, we could sing Hallel on Pesach because we were servants of Paro, but comes Pesach, we're no longer servants of Paro, we're only servants of God. So too, you could plug that into every Yom Tov. But when it comes to Purim, says the Gemara, you can't say Hallel, why? Hacha, excuse me, look at the last phrase in number one, Akate Avdi Achashverosh Anan. To which the Gemara says, you can't say Hallel on Purim. Why? Because at the end of the Purim story, as much as the Jews are saved, we are still what? We are still the servants of Ahasuerus. This goes back to last week's shir. We were speaking about, remember the machlokes of the dispute between Mordechai and his rabbinic colleagues. Mordechai feeling the need to remain in politics, feeling the need to remain in the palace, knowing that we were not safe, we were not secure, because we were at the mercy of an unpredictable, despotic ruler. So therefore, says the Gemara, you could only say Hallel when the salvation is such that we only serve God and not the human master. And that's why, again, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkot, and Chanukah also. Because remember, again, as much as Chanukah is not a complete redemption, because things were still profoundly broken in the aftermath of the Chanukah story, we were autonomous. At least for a few hundred years. We were autonomous. We did not serve the Syrian Greeks. We served no one but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So three answers as to why we don't go ahead and read the Megillah on, read Hallel on Purim. Number one, because it's a miracle that occurred outside the land of Israel. Number two, because we read the Megillah, Kriyasa Zuha Leila, the Megillah itself is in the place of Hallel. And number three, because you only say Hallel when you could say Hallelu Avde Hashem. Only when we are solely servants of God. But when we serve a human master, such as the end of the Purim story, we are still the servants of Achashverosh, so no Hallel. Now, just to point out to you, we're not doing it inside, but in your free time, you'll take a look at number two and three. So the Meiri and the Shari Tshuva bring down this fascinating idea. Therefore, if a person is in a place where, let's say, they can't hear the Megillah, let's say I'm in a circumstance where I can't hear the Megillah, for whatever the reason, there's no minyan, there's no Megillah, nobody knows how to read. So actually the Meiri brings down the idea that one should recite Hallel in the absence of the Megillah. Of course, that only works according to answer number two. Answer number two, that the Megillah takes the place of Hallel. Okay, if you don't have Megillah, therefore you say Hallel. If you take a look at number three, the Shari Tshuva actually says something amazing in the name of the Chidah. The Chidah is Rechaim David Azuloi. He says the following, the Hallel lahalacha, din ein lo Megillah yikra Hallel, achein below bracha shalafanav ula. So the Chidah actually says, if you don't have a Megillah, so you will actually go ahead and recite Hallel, but you'll recite Hallel without brachos. No blessings. Look what he says. Umisayim sham, va'af im yesh lo chumish shekori bo Megillah atzmo, miko mokom harotze likros gam Hallel below bracha lo hifsid, de'af. So listen to what the Chidah actually writes. By the way, if you want, you know, This is not our topic for today, but there's an, we're going to talk about this more in tonight's shir. Tonight at 8 o'clock at the show, we're doing a little bit about Tainus Esther and about this concept of tefillah on Purim. Purim is a day that's incredibly misugal, incredibly ripe for tefillah. So therefore, the Chidah says that the truth is you can say Hallel on Purim if you want to, just don't say it with brachas. And if you don't say Hallel with brachas, then guess what? What are you saying? Right? You're saying Tehillim. So the Chidah says the truth is everybody could say Hallel on Purim if you want to, just again without brachos and betoras tefillah, betoras Tehillim. So again, that's all the Hallel. Now, what I think is especially riveting about this is take a look at number 4. So today, we're going to focus a little bit from a beautiful sefer called the Tal Aleichayim. Tal Aleichayim is a sefer written by Rav Chaim Cohen, Chaim HaCohen. Chaim Cohen is known, I think I've mentioned this before in this class, as the Chalban. The Chalban is, he's one of probably the greatest Kabbalists in Eretz Yisrael today. He's a fascinating individual. You could Google him, Chalban. And he's a clean-shaven mekubal. So there aren't too many clean-shaven mekubalim. He's a fascinating individual, considered to be one of the foremost mekubalim in Eretz Yisrael. They called him the Chalban, not because of anything esoteric, because he worked at the Tenuva dairy factory, right, for about 40 years. So just, by the way, anyone who says that you can't become a great Talmud Chacham, right, and also develop a career, or be a great mekubal, develop a career, you look up the Chalban. It's absolutely amazing. See, he puts out his... I don't know if he writes his own Divrei Torah or someone else writes it for him, but he wrote a series of Sfarim under the name Tal Aleichayim. And in there, the Chalban is an absolutely... His Torah is so sweet, and his Torah is so beautiful, and he delves down, he drills down really into just some of the core of the issue. So he discusses this idea of Hallel on Purim. I don't know why I was drawn to this piece. This question never bothered me so much in past years. This year really bothered me about the lack of Hallel on Purim. It doesn't make any sense. Every other Yom Tov we have Hallel, Purim we don't have. And it's true, the Gemara gives 3 answers. But if we're honest with ourselves, you know, 2 out of the 3 answers don't seem to really hold up so much. The last one holds up a little bit more, Avakate Abdi Achashirashana, but still, why not? Such an incredible, miraculous salvation. Understand Purim represented an existential threat to the Jewish. You have to understand something. Chanukah, there wasn't an existential threat. Chanukah, there was a spiritual threat. Purim, there was mamish lahashmid, laharog, ulaabed, to wipe out every single Jew, man, woman, and child. Understand, that is the MO of Amalek. Remember again, Haman, Hitler, Yemach Shemo v'Zichro, this is what these enemies want to do. They want to wipe out, eradicate the Jewish people. There's no greater threat than Amalek. And yet, again, no Hallel on this day seems strange, despite the Gemara's answers. So look at number 4. The Tal Aleichayim writes something. He says, No dahadavar, she'ikra halal hu'al nisi etzias Yisrael. Now remember, going back to the Gemara, the paradigm for Hallel comes from the Exodus. The Exodus, Yitzias Mitzrayim, is the paradigm for Hallel. In fact, again, when one looks at Hallel, one will see that virtually all of the paragraphs that we recite as part of Hallel all go ahead and reference Yitzias Mitzrayim. Again, remember, second paragraph in to Hallel, what do we say? Bitzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim. Because really, the Exodus from Egypt is the paradigm, ultimately, again, for Hallel. Sorry, let me just... Mr. Shulman forgot to make the announcement about shutting off phones, so I've heard. Give me one moment. Okay, so look what the Tal Aleichayim writes. He says, therefore the paradigm for Hallel is what he calls the Hallel HaMitzri. Hallel HaMitzri means the complete Hallel Shalem that we recite on Pesach. V'nimtza, sha'halal hu so ta'aras Pesach, v'hine hayom makom lomar, sha'asiba shein homrim halal b'purim. So again, if we understand that Pesach is the paradigmatic halal experience, that Pesach represents the paradigmatic experience over which you recite halal, I understand then why there is no halal on Purim. Very simply, machmas ha'hevdal ha'mahuti, shalat Purim mechaga Pesach or me'lo mehalal. Because understand, if Pesach is the experiential paradigm for when we recite Hallel, then I understand why we don't recite Purim. Because if we're playing the opposite game and I say, Pesach, you're going to say, Let's try this again. I'm feeding you these lines. Right? Right? It's a Purim share. So if I say Pesach, the opposite you're going to say is?
Purim.
Thank you very much. Right, Purim. Kinoda, number four, fourth line in. Kinoda, Shesot Ha'aras HaPesach, Hu Agilui Elokos Milamalo. What is Pesach? Pesach is supernatural activity at every single turn. There is nothing natural about the Pesach story. Every single thing, from the time that redemption begins, think about it, from the time that the makas, that the plagues begin, until the time, not even that we leave Egypt, but through the splitting of the sea, everything is miraculous and supernatural. He goes on, he says, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Pal Ba'atzmo Bra Muso. Because remember again, God controls everything about the Pesach story. He manipulates nature, but he doesn't just manipulate nature. What else does he manipulate? Something that is totally out of the box. People. People. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu hardens Paro's heart. He takes away Paro's Bechira Chavshus, Paro's free will. God never does that. Free will is the one thing that God almost always, I say almost because Pesach is the exception, leaves intact. God does not tamper with man's free will. Yet on Pesach he does. On Pesach he does. He manipulates the laws of nature. He manipulates man's free will. Pesach is supernatural at every twist and turn. On the other hand, Lu'umas Zos, I'm in number four, five lines in, right after the comma. Lu'umas Zos, Purim omed besod pu'ula milatasa, besod Mordechai ve'Esther. Yet when you look at the Purim story, the one word that you would not use to describe the Purim story at all is supernatural. Purim is not a supernatural story. Purim is a seemingly, at least superficially, ordinary story. It's a story of great people making incredibly heroic decisions, as we learned about last week, and orchestrating and choreographing the events of life. Alkein, Hayamakom Lisbar Velomar, She'ein Omrim Halo Bepurim Machmas, She'ein Bo Inyon Lishabeach Al Misim Elyonim, She'ezet Tochen Shel Halal. So the most things I would have like this. You know what Halal is? Halal is the prayerful response to supernatural activity. So when God brings plagues, and when God splits seas, and when God goes ahead and comes down on mountains, and God shelters us with clouds all around, okay, that's when you say halal. Halal is the supplicatory response or prayerful response to supernatural activity. I understand that. Purim is not supernatural. Purim is a Yom Tov that is shrouded in ordinary, mundane circumstances. So if you tell me that that is the paradigm ultimately for Halal, I understand why there's no Halal on Purim. But go on, yes.
Rosh Chodesh.
Rosh Chodesh is a different animal. Rosh Chodesh is a, remember, Rosh Chodesh, when we speak about Halal, Halal is Halal Shalim. Anytime you're not saying complete Halal, like a partial Halal, that's a separate prayer framework. So Rosh Chodesh is, we'll save that for when Wednesday lines up with Rosh Chodesh. Take a look at number five. Now watch this. So now we understand over here. So based on what Tzadik Chaim just wrote, and again, this construct, by the way, I happen to think what the Chalban wrote, Tzadik Chaim wrote number four, actually resonates more than the reasons of the Gemara. I mean, this is a much simpler construct. Halal is something that is said about supernatural things. Now, of course, the Tzadik Chaim says, I know the hole in my argument. The hole in my argument is what? Chanukah is the hole in the argument, right? Because Chanukah is not a supernatural Yom Tov. It's true, the nes of the Pach Shemen was supernatural, but the victory, which really is what Chanukah is about, was not supernatural. It was an event. Chanukah is a Yom Tov cloaked in ordinary circumstances. But again, at least for Chanukah, you do have a supernatural element. Even if it's not totally supernatural, the nes of the cruise of oil was supernatural. So again, it seems to me we have a framework over here. We have, perhaps, again, if Pesach is the paradigm for Halal, Pesach is supernatural. Halal only said for supernatural events, therefore no Halal on Purim. And by the way, you could give me, of course, everything, the natural is supernatural, and the Gaon Shalom is beautiful, wonderful, I agree with all of that. But at the end of the day, it sets Purim apart from everything else. Purim is not a supernatural Yom Tov. That is clear. That's an unarguable stance. Purim is not a supernatural Yom Tov. Therefore, perhaps it doesn't belong in the framework of the construct of Halal. But here's where it gets very interesting. So if Pesach now is the paradigm. Now, I'll tell you something interesting about Pesach. Number five. And again, I just want to go on record as saying, Don't get nervous about Pesach. Don't get nervous. It's going to be all right. Pesach is a beautiful Yom Tov. As I told you when this came up last time, if Pesach gives you anxiety, if Pesach requires you to up the dosages of your medication, then I'm telling you, you're doing something wrong. Reach out to your Rav, or reach out to your Rebbe, reach out to someone and say, Rabbi, Rav, Rebbe, Pesach gives me incredible anxiety. What am I doing wrong? And I'm telling you, if it gives you anxiety, you're doing something wrong. It's a lot. It's a lot to prepare. It's a lot to plan for. But chas v'shalom, derachei darchinam, everything in Yiddishkeit is beautiful, magnificent, and wonderful. And if it gives you negative feelings, then you have to figure out where you've gone wrong. In any event, back to number five. So says the Gemara. Tanya, Amar lahem ben zom lechachamim, v'chi maskirin mitzias shayin limos ha-mashiach. So the Gemara here deals with a fascinating discussion. What's going to happen in the Messianic era with Mashiach? Well, excuse me, with Pesach. Are we going to remember the Exodus in the Messianic era? Now understand, right now in our Judaism, so pretty much everything we do somehow, some way, we include the phrase of Zechar Yetzias Mitzrayim. For a very simple reason. This is the Ramban at the end of Parshas Beshalach, Parshas Bo. The Ramban explains that, again, remember, the Exodus is where we really saw God for the first time as a creator. As much as God solidified and concretized his identity as a creator when he created the world, there's only one problem, which is no one saw it. None of us saw it. So we believe it, but we didn't see it. Pesach, the Exodus, it says, is when we saw God in his creative capacity, his control over man, his control over nature. Therefore, everything we have, therefore, again, the Exodus is a foundation stone, is a pillar for our Yiddishkeit. But as the Gemara, when Mashiach comes, remember again, Messianic redemption, we know, will eclipse the Exodus in its scope, profundity, and greatness. So the question is, will we remember the Exodus when Mashiach comes or not? So the Gemara says, "V'alo kvar ne'amar, hine yomim ba'an du'um Hashem v'lo yomru od chayesh ha-mashalas b'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim, kim chayesh ha-mashalahelo, es zera beis Yisrael me'eretz tzafon, v'kal ha'atz asher didachtim." So the pasuk seems to indicate that when Mashiach comes, we will no longer remember the Exodus. To which the Gemara says, "Lo sheti agir Yisrael koma, el sheti shibun machios ikar." So the Gemara says, well, it's a dispute. Two different opinions. One opinion says when Mashiach comes, we will no longer make reference to the Exodus. Right? The Exodus will no longer play a dominant part in our Judaic identity. The Exodus will simply slip into the recesses of Jewish consciousness because it will be replaced with Messianic redemption. Others say no. The Exodus will always be a part of the Jewish consciousness, but it won't be primary like it is now. It will be secondary to Messianic redemption. Now, either way, what comes out is, either when Mashiach comes, Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to be totally forgotten. And I say, it sounds strange to say that. We'll say pushed to the recesses of the Jewish consciousness or subconsciousness, or it will become secondary. That's Pesach. Pesach, which is this paradigm for Hallel. Yet, look at number six. The Rambam says something absolutely amazing, which is exceptionally controversial and difficult to understand, but we'll just read it anyway. It says, Kol Sif, number six. Kol Sifri Anavim V'chalaksuvim Asidin Libat Limosa Mashiach. Every single one of the 24 books of Tanakh, excuse me, I shouldn't say 24 books, not talking about the Chumash, it's talking about Nach, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, will become batel, will become void when Mashiach comes, which, by the way, what's the logic behind that? The logic behind that is much of Nevi'im and Ksuvim is focused on Messianic redemption. So in some way, one way or another, when Mashiach comes, we don't need those Sfarim anymore. Now, I'll just tell you, by the way, without getting into this, the Ravid, the number seven, jumps on this Rambam. And if you skip just down to number seven for just a moment, it says, Amar Avram, the Ravid says, Divar Hedyoto Suze. These are the words of a simpleton. This is the Ravid attacking the Rambam. So the Ravid takes clearly again, he's saying, Rambam, I would like to politely disagree with you. Right? Meaning, again, so the Ravid obviously takes aim, attacks viciously the Rambam, because he feels the words of the Rambam are fundamentally and profoundly flawed. Again, we're not going to get into this debate. What I want to show you is back up to number six, the next line of the Rambam. Chutz Mimigilas Esther. Chutz Mimigilas Esther. In the Maimonidean view, when Mashiach comes, every single book of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, Shoftim, and Shmuel Aleph, and Shmuel Beis, and Melachim Aleph, and Melachim Beis, and Yirmiyahu, and Treyasar, and everyone else, and everything else falls to the side, except for Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther remains. So pretty much, if you could imagine, when Mashiach comes according to the Rambam, it's going to be Chamishei Chumshei Torah, the five books of the Chumash, and Megillas Esther. That is going to be the entirety of Tanakh. Right? I'm sorry? I don't know what you... Tehillim maybe fall more within the framework of prayer. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the Rambam does with Tehillim.
Seems weird that we shouldn't remember the roots of David HaMelech and all that.
You take it up with the Rambam. Take it with the Rambam. I'm not taking a side on it. I'm just a purveyor of information. You do with it as you want. I agree, it sounds exceptionally strange. And again, I want to be clear. It's obviously a major machlokas. But again, I'm only giving you this for one reason, which is to highlight the eternality of Purim. To highlight the eternality of Purim, what the Rambam essentially is saying is that even when Mashiach comes, all of the other Sifrei Tanakh, and by the way, it's not just the Sifrei Tanakh, it's according to him also some of the other Yomim Tovim fall away as well, which makes sense. Pesach is about Yitzias Mitzrayim. Sukkis is about Yitzias Mitzrayim. Shavuos is a little bit different. Shavuos Matan Torah, we'll see what will happen. But again, I want you to understand what's unfolding over here. We just got finished saying in number 4, and really in numbers 1, 2, and 3, that the whole idea is that Pesach is the paradigm. Pesach is the paradigm for Geula. Pesach is the paradigm for redemption. Pesach is the paradigm for Hallel. Right? Because Pesach represents full, highest level of redemption, supernatural redemption. Now, and therefore, again, I understand why I don't say Hallel on Purim, because Purim is not a supernatural redemption, it's ordinary events. Yet, when we see, again, the comparison between Purim and Pesach, we see a dramatic unfolding. Pesach, when Mashiach comes, is either going to what? Either going to occupy a second-tier status, or perhaps even what? Be forgotten altogether. All the Sifrei Tanakh, all the Sifrei Tanakh, according to the Rambam, will cease from their usefulness when Mashiach comes, yet what? Megillas Esther, Purim will not. So on one hand, you're telling me that Pesach is the paradigm of salvation, seemingly occupying a higher tier than Purim. Yet, when it comes to the eternality of the Yom Tov, the eternality of Purim seems to surpass the eternality of Pesach. Pesach has a limited shelf life. Pesach is impactful until Mashiach comes. But once Mashiach comes, Pesach either disappears or is relegated to a secondary importance, yet Purim remains where it is. What's unfolding over here? Take a look at number 8. So back to the Chalban. Talei Chaim says, watch this. Get ready. V'hinei naskil, shekfi shebegeula achrona lo ne'amar ha'ala mitzri. Now what comes out is something amazing. It turns out that when Mashiach comes, we're probably going to say hallel, right? We would assume we're going to say hallel. But it's not going to be what we call hallel ha'mitzri, meaning what we call hallel shalim today, complete hallel, that we recite in our Yomim Tovim. That's called hallel ha'mitzri. Because again, the Exodus is the paradigm for events over which you say hallel. So Mashiach comes, again, either Pesach is not going to be observed anymore, or be relegated to a second-tier status, which means that we're no longer going to be saying hallel ha'mitzri. Ela, hallel al gu'ula senu. There's going to be another type of hallel. Whatever it is, it's the type of hallel again on our redemption. Sod Shira Chadasha. The Messianic era is going to bring with it a new type of hallel. A new type of song. A Shira Chadasha. A different kind of hallel than what the one we've been singing for the last thousands of years. Shehi hallel otsum v'gadol. Shelo yuchal ha'peh la'aviyah. Ad shelo yafiyo b'shlemos oro. These words are just... they're magnificent to read. The type of hallel that our lips can't say yet because our hearts and our soul don't yet understand it. But it's going to be a magnificent hallel. It's going to be a beautiful hallel. A hallel unlike anything we've known. Hine gam, get ready for this line. Hine gam bepurim yesh me'in v'dugmas inyon zeh. Says the Talei Chaim, here's the amazing part. There's going to be a special hallel that we're going to sing when Mashiach comes. A hallel that we don't know. Except for one day when we do know it. There's one day when you get a little taste of Messianic hallel. There's one day when you get a little taste of that hallel that we don't even know what it is yet. There's one day when you feel a little bit of that beautiful shira, of that shira chadasha, and says the Talei Chaim, that's Purim. He goes on, he says, V'lachein, hine gam bepurim, yesh me'in v'dugmas inyon zeh. Talei Chaim suggests, do you know why Megillas Esther is going to exist even when Mashiach comes? Do you know why we're going to celebrate Purim even when Mashiach comes? Because Purim is messianic in nature. Because the Yom Tov of Purim, you're right, is not like Pesach, and it's not like Sukkot, and it's not like Shavuos. The Yom Tov of Purim is like something that we have not yet even fully experienced. The Yom Tov of Purim is much more in line with Yemos HaMashiach, with the Messianic era, than it is with any of the other Yomim Tovim we have now. We don't say Halal HaMitzri on Purim, not because of all of the reasons we saw in the Gemara. We don't say Halal HaMitzri on Purim because Halal HaMitzri doesn't belong on Purim. Because Halal HaMitzri, complete Halal, is the Halal that is said of Yomim Tovim that exist in the pre-Messianic era. But Purim lends itself, Purim is more associated with the Messianic era, the Yemos HaMashiach, than it is with anything that we know now. What does this mean? He says, number 9, Hine, in Omrim Halal B'Purim, Kedei L'Rameis Asod HaNe'alam. We don't say Halal on Purim for one simple reason. After questions at the end. We don't say Halal on Purim for one simple reason, which is to teach us, to remind us, about the Sod, the secret of Purim. Sheyesh bo me'ein ha'gu'ula ha'asiyah. That Purim has embedded within it elements of messianic redemption. Umikocho mamshichem anu es ha'gu'ula ha'asiyah. Ki kala oros ha'alyonim ha'asiyah mofiyem ma'at gam ba'olam hazeh. Zua aras Purim, ha'aras mechias amalik. So says the Talich Haim something amazing. And again, we don't know what he's talking about yet, but just these words are overwhelming. What the Talich Haim says is everyone thinks that we don't say Halal on Purim because Purim is a lesser Yom Tov. We think that we don't say Halal on Purim because it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, because you have the Megillah, because we're still servants of Achashverosh. No, no, no. We don't say Halal. Listen to these words. We don't say Halal on Purim because there is no Halal that exists yet that is capable of capturing the essence of this day. The only Halal we have is the Halal HaMitzri. That's the Halal for Pesach. That's the Halal for our Yomim Tovim. But we need the Halal for the Messianic era, the Shira Chadasha. The words have not yet been written. The tunes have not yet been put together. That's the Halal of Purim. There's no Halal on Purim because the Halal that we have today, what we call the Halal HaMitzri, the Halal Shalim, would it not capture the essence of this day? But what does this mean? Take a look at number 10. Talich Haim says again, Anuroim, Kamen Akudos, Sharoshios, Behebdo Be Purim Pesach. So remember again, Talich Haim goes back and he says, let's analyze this a little bit more. So wherein lies the distinctions between Halal and Pesach? Let's analyze this. He says, Yesh Beneim Hafochatsu, Be Pesach Halo Gilim Me'ot, Nifku Hashemayim, Ve'es Gal Siyan Hashem. So remember again, on one hand, like we said before, the obvious distinction between these days is that Pesach is a supernatural experience. Pesach is kulo supernatural. Everything is supernatural about it. Lumazos, Beparim haya hefech mamish, Shem Shraim nistam ha-Megillah, like we spoke about again, God's name doesn't even appear in the Megillah. Hakol mira ma'ase b'nei Adam v'tach b'lusa b'lushum eskor l'neis u'pelo ma'achem al teva. You could read the story of Purim and you could simply attribute it to what? Or even if you don't want to be such a coincidence verse, you could say, brave people making brave decisions. Brave people making brave decisions. Is God choreographing things? We're sure He is, but the truth is, you could attribute it to good human intuition. As Ikra Hevdel Anaron Ba'afas Hashem B'Domios HaAnoshel Shai B'Shtei Gulos. So again, he then goes on to explain that there's another major distinction, like we alluded to before. In Pesach, there was what he calls Netilas HaBechira. God took away free choice from man. And by the way, remember, we learned about this last week as well. God takes away free choice from man on two levels. Yes, He takes away from Paro. Who else does He take it away from? We learned about this last week. Moshe. Right? Even Moshe, to a certain degree, doesn't have the same level of Bechira. Moshe Rabbeinu is given a framework. Moshe Rabbeinu is given a choreographical framework. His framework is choreographed. He's given ultimately again a script, and he's asked to stay on script. Paro has his free choice removed, yet what's the Megillah all about? The Megillah is all about free choice. The Megillah is all about people's abilities to make decisions, good and bad. How does the Megillah begin? The Megillah begins by Achashverosh making a dramatic decision. The decision to execute Vashti. And that decision triggers a whole other series of events. And Mordechai makes his decisions. And Esther makes her decisions. The Purim is dramatically different than Pesach on these two levels. Number one, Pesach is supernatural. Purim is ordinary natural. Number two, Pesach is where God removes man's free will. Purim is a great intensity of man's free will. But go to number 11. Get ready. And here it is. I know you've been waiting. Here it is. Number 11. Look at paragraph Aleph. Masha'en king b'Purim. Shaya Gilui, paragraph Aleph, just a few lines up before the Aleph, but where the underlines begin. He says, Shaya Gilui bebechinas Hester, she'asher his galus dafka dach b'nei adav lo ma'aleim. Is God manifest in the Megillah? Of course. Just not in a supernatural fashion. In a very ordinary way, through the normal everyday activities of man. He goes on, dafka derech b'nei adav, through the actions of man, velo ma'alehem, but not on top of them. He says, v'derech ha'teva v'cheshbonos ha'metzius, velo b'bechinas koach elyon ha'shover es ha'teva, v'esakom ha'enoshis. You know, in Pesach, in Mitzrayim, God presented himself as the overlord of nature. How did he present himself as the overlord of nature? By breaking the laws of nature. God smashed nature in a million pieces. Right? He did things that went against the laws of nature to show his dominance, to show his power, and to show his incredible, overreaching, far-reaching autonomy. Yet, interestingly enough, says the Talei Chaim, in Purim, the Ribono Shel Olam also reveals himself. But not as the overlord of nature, but instead what? Through nature. Through the natural occurrences every single day. The Davar Zeh, get ready for this. The Davar Zeh, Hevi lide giloi elokos atzum vegado. Adraba, dafka shze sheshem shamayim mister, bohu eidos anochachto vispar pechol mamish. Talei Chaim says something that when I first say it, you're going to say to yourself that can't be correct. But then we're going to analyze it and we're going to see how profoundly correct it is. Talei Chaim posits that God's presence is much more manifest when the Ribono Shel Olam expresses himself through day-to-day life than when he expresses himself through miraculous activity. No. How so? Look at this next line, and I asterisked it for you. Right? Did I asterisk it for you on your page?
Yeah,
it's asterisked for you, so you shouldn't miss it. You could highlight it, you could underline it, you could cut it out and laminate it. But this is, look what he writes. Ki b'shah sheshem shamayim nigla, az eino nira ela bebechina shenizgale ba. Talei Chaim says something, I don't know if I mentioned to you that this is riveting, but it's riveting. Talei Chaim says, when the Ribono Shel Olam does miracles, you know the only thing that people see are miracles. So when the Ribono Shel Olam splits the sea, what I see is God's ability to split the water. When the Ribono Shel Olam goes ahead and brings down Barad, right, brings down the hail that is a mixture of fire and water, what I see is God's ability to merge fire and water. And when the Ribono Shel Olam takes away Paro's free will, what I see is God's ability to even tamper with man's free will. But that's all I see. I don't see anything other than that. I don't see any greater picture. When our ancestors walked through the split Yam Suf, all they saw was God's magnificent vis-a-vis the Yam Suf. It could have been a beautiful day. The birds could have been chirping. The sun might have been magnificent. They might have had their health. They might have had their parnasa. Everybody was there. There might have been so many other incredible things going on. But they didn't see it. Because that's what miracles do. Miracles divert your attention towards the miraculous event. And that's all you see. You see the greatness of God as expressed through one miraculous event. But look at this next line. I'm telling you, this is life-altering. Masha'en kein, biyoso nistar. When God is hidden, sha'as hu lemaisa matsui bakol mamish. When God is hidden, you understand that what's your job when God is hidden? To see God everywhere and in everything. And as such, Umenal es hakol v'hakol batalbo. So the Talei Chaim says something, I promised you, it was dramatically amazing. Talei Chaim says, ordinary events are greater than any miracle. Because miracles are great for the one-off, right? Miracles are incredible, but miracles limit your God conception, or limit your God appreciation or limit your God understanding. Because when miracles occur, what ends up happening is, that's what I'm drawn to. I'm drawn to the miraculous event. Oh, I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's my God. He's incredible. He split the sea. But all I see is that event. Whereas God, when God goes ahead and chooses to cloak himself in the mundane world, I have, my job is to see God in everything. So suddenly again, I'm not just seeing God in a split sea, but I'm seeing God in the blade of grass that grows. I'm seeing God in the beautiful sun that is shining. I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my family that surrounds me. I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my ability to move my fingers without effort. Because God is not manifest or revealed acutely in one place, I have to strive to see Him in every place. And as such, says the Talal Chaim, as great as Pesach was, our appreciation and understanding of the Ribono Shel Olam was limited to the miraculous prisms through which God occurred. And by the way, when you understand this idea, it sheds so much light on our ancestors' behavior when they left Egypt and during their sojourn in the desert. Right? Remember, again, we are always bothered by, we're bothered by like 4 out of the 5 books of the Torah. Because for 4 out of the 5 books, the storyline is the same, which is, we misbehave. That's pretty much like the underlying storyline. Right? We misbehave, we forget about God, we complain about God. So you always wonder to yourself, like, it doesn't even make sense. Right? You wake up every single morning, the man is at your doorstep. Right? You never have to do laundry because the clouds are constantly laundering your clothing. You never have to go shopping, which I know might be a plus or a minus for some, right? Because your clothing grows with you. Right? Everything is, God is there. There's a fire at night, there's a cloud by day. And yet, again, one thing goes wrong, and like you fly off the handle, one thing goes wrong and you have a spiritual meltdown, right? You can't handle, because it makes sense. Because their entire relationship with God was through miracles. So miracles are great as long as they're constantly going on, right? As long as you're constantly spiritually entertained. So ultimately, again, you see God, oh, incredible, incredible, incredible. But once it stops, you don't have the ability to see God in the mundane. All you see God is, that was our problem. We saw God in the miraculous. So the miracles were great, they were intense, we saw it. But you notice, the moment that we had to try to see God in the mundane, we fell apart. So the moment the Meraglim, the spies come back and they say, listen, there's a lot of strong people in this land. Then people fall, what do you mean? How could there be strong people? Why didn't God do a shock and awe campaign before we got in there, level the land, and that's it, let us come in. We're going to have to do stuff. We're going to have to work. I don't know, how do we do that? And then come all flustered. Says Talal Chaim, because understand, the greatest accomplishment of the Jew and the most intense relationship with God is not seeing God in miraculous activity. Because when you see God in miraculous activity, all you see is God in that one space. The greatest achievement for the Jew is to be able to see God in everywhere and everything. And says the Talal Chaim, this is the most incredible thing. We always think that the greatest manifestation of God is in the miraculous events. That's not true. The greatest, because again, miraculous events is only one manifestation of God. Whereas when you try to find the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the natural order of world, you see God in hundreds upon thousands of ways. Paragraph B, look at this. Get ready. Nimsa shebepurim hisbarra madrega atzuma begila elokus. Says the Talal Chaim, now you're going to understand why Purim is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Why Purim is the holiest of all days. Because every other yontiv we have has a miracle to draw our attention. Every other yontiv has something for us to say, incredible. And we see God through that miraculous prism. But Purim ultimately, again, is a day, is a yontiv that is cloaked in mundanity. But it's that mundanity that allows us to see God in every single thing. She sold this galus alakus bakol mamish. She nol milvado va'af ateva hu gilui shelo yisbarach. V'china b'chira noshis. He goes on, skip down to paragraph gimel. Dover zeh. Mevi simch l'simcha atzuma l'chol Yisrael b'chol hadoros. Says the Talal Chaim. Now you begin to understand why Purim has an eternal importance. Because Purim is the yomtiv that teaches us that the greatest connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not by finding God through miraculous activity. The greatest relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes from finding God in the mundane and ordinary circumstances. Because when you find God through miraculous activity, you have one point of connection. You have one relationship portal. But when you find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything in this world, every single thing that happens, every single thing that you do, every single thing that occurs becomes a portal, becomes an entry point for relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Skip down a little bit. I'm not doing everything. There's more here that you should look at. But essentially what Talmid Chaim is saying is something amazing. When there's a miracle, you see God in the miracle. When there's no miracle, you see God in everything. Look what he writes, paragraph number 12. Get ready. V'kini od taskil so gadol, shamegila asuya kikdugmas hachaye olam hazeh. Ki mechaye ha'olam hazeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu nistar ma'od, v'ne'elam me'achorei nesibos yiruim. That's why, again, says Talmid Chaim, you ever wonder, it's an interesting thing. We feel such a sense of connection to Purim. Now, it's easy to say, well, it's fun. The truth is, it's one of the more fun Yomim Tovim, right? No question. No question. Even though there's a lot of preparation that we have to do, what's the connection? Why does the neshama feel so pulled to Purim? Because at the end of the day, Purim is life. Purim is life. Most of us are not experiencing a split sea. And most of us are not getting mum to our doorstep. And most of us have to do laundry. So we're no longer living in the days of overt miracles. But yet Purim speaks to us because what Purim says is, we often think that we are lacking in the absence of overt miracles. You know what Purim teaches us? Just the opposite. We're not lacking. Our lives are enriched because of the absence of overt miracles. Because overt miracles, because although they're wonderful, and although they're great, and although we'd love to have them sometimes, they direct your attention only in one direction. And you lose out on the magnificent opportunity to see everything, and to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything. In the absence of overt miraculous activity, we have the great opportunity and great privilege to see the Ribono Shel Olam in everything. Where there are no overt miracles, the Jew sees God in everything. And that is the message of Purim. And that is the message of the Megillah. The whole story of the Megillah, again, is the Ribono Shel Olam seeing God in everything. When Achashverosh decides to kill Vashti, the Ribono Shel Olam is involved in that. Does he take Achashverosh's Bechir? Of course not. The appointment of Esther, God is involved in that. The appointment of Mordechai to a high position, God is in that. The assassination attempt from Bigson and Seresh to Achashverosh, God is involved in that every single step. But again, if there was a splitting of the sea, all you would see is the splitting of the sea. Because there's no splitting of the sea, we are forced to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every single ordinary and mundane detail. And now we understand. Now we understand. Why is there no Hallel on Purim? Why is there no Hallel on Purim? So now we understand because Purim... Let me go back for a second. So what did the Rambam mean when he said that Megillas Esther is going to be in existence in Yemos HaMashiach in the Messianic era, which by extension means that Purim is going to be celebrated in the Messianic era? What is the Messianic era? So the simple answer is, we don't know, right? That's the simple answer, right? Now again, because there's major dispute about what's going to happen when Mashiach comes, right? You know, on one hand, again, you have Mamari Chazal, when Mashiach comes, the trees are going to plant themselves, bear fruits themselves, the land is going to supply us with incredible bounty, and again, it's going to be almost like a supernatural existence. The Maimonidean approach is that no, Yemos HaMashiach is, you're going to have to pay a mortgage, you're going to have to pay your tuition, maybe there'll be vouchers when Mashiach comes, you know, whatever it is. But life is going to go on as it's supposed to go on. The difference, so what happens? So again, what happens is the world, mankind, recognizes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which who could even measure the impact that has on this world? Who could even imagine the peace and the harmony that will be felt when mankind as a whole experiences and says HaKadosh Baruch Hu? But more than that, you know what the Messianic era is? The Messianic era is the existence in which we see God in anything and everything. Yemos HaMashiach is when you walk outside and you see the shining sun and you see, not just, oh, thank God it's not raining, but you see the Ribono Shel Olam. Yemos HaMashiach is when you see your child, and your child itself, you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yemos HaMashiach is when you go outside and you see that there's a beautiful tree blossom, and you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yemos HaMashiach is when you see that Baruch Hashem, you have some money in your account. Maybe it's not as much as you would like, but there's money in your account. You see the Ribono Shel Olam. You open the refrigerator, and there's food. You see the Ribono Shel Olam. That's what Yemos HaMashiach is. Yemos HaMashiach is when you see God in everything and in anything and everything. But that's what Purim is also. Purim is one day that we get to live in the Messianic era. Purim is one day that we get to live in Yemos HaMashiach. That's Purim is one day where we get to feel a little bit of what it means to be able to push ourselves to see God in everything in Yemos HaMashiach, the Messianic era. Seeing God in everything will come naturally. It will come naturally to us. Now it's a struggle. Now it's a challenge. But Purim gives us the safe space, so to speak, to be able to work on it. And now if we come full circle, we understand ultimately again why we don't say Hallel on Purim. Because remember, the Hallel that we have is what's called the Hallel HaMitzri. Right? The Hallel that we have, the Egyptian Hallel, which is the Hallel that comes from the supernatural experience. A Hallel that is rooted in supernatural, miraculous activity. That's not for Purim. That's not for Purim. But again, not because Purim is a lesser yomtiv. Just the opposite. That hallel, to get afterwards, that hallel does not that lack of hallel on Purim does not represent a lesser spiritual experience. Fakir, just the opposite. It represents an elevated spiritual experience. A spiritual experience that is not rooted in a miracle, but a spiritual experience that is rooted in the ability to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in anything and everything. You know what the amazing part is? That's Yemos HaMashiach. That's Messianic era. But the Messianic hallel, the Shira Chadasha, has not yet been written. So because it hasn't been written yet, we have an inability to sing it, we have an inability to say it, we have an inability to include it in our tefillos. This is the power of Purim. So I'm going to leave you with this thought. Actually, I'll tell you one last, we'll stop with this, but I'll just tell you one last piece, which is, you know, sometimes over the course of Purim, we become so involved in a lot of the details that we lose the trees from the forest. Everyone's so busy trying to figure out what the theme of the Shalach Manos is. I have a great theme for you. Simple and inexpensive. That's the best theme a Jew could ever do. Simple and inexpensive. You know what the best theme is? The best theme is fulfilling a mitzvah. That's the best theme. Two items, two brachas, something useful that people are not just going to give to their cleaning lady, because again, it's Pesach coming up in 2 weeks, right? But something meaningful, something simple. As the halacha says, better to spend less money on mishloach manos and give more money to matanos levyonim. Better to go ahead and give your mishloach manos to people who need it, and not just to give it to your social circle, your friends who know that you love them already anyway. But we often lose. And Su'udah, what are we going to serve? Who are we going to have? These are all important details. But Purim is one day that we get to live in the Messianic era. Purim is one day which is so great that there's not even a halal that could capture it. Purim is so great that if we close our eyes and we open our hearts and we open our souls, that you could feel a little bit of Mashiach. The avodah of Purim is that as you go throughout your day, try to find a Kadosh Baruch Hu in anything and everything. I'll end with this. Take a look at number 13. The Gemara says, Amar Rava mechayiv inish levasume bepuria adlo yada bein arham lebarach Mordechai. So we know this famous Gemara. We talked about this last year, that a person is obligated to drink on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between arham and barach Mordechai. You know the power of drinking, says the Gemara Maseches Erevin number 14, is nichnas yayin yatsa sod. Nichnas yayin yatsa sod. Wine comes in, secrets come out. So on a very basic level, that Gemara doesn't need too much interpretation, right? It's pretty clear, right? The person drinks a little bit, those inhibitions, those walls that we all build often come down, and a lot of stuff comes out that I normally keep in check. But Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, the great Kohen of Lublin, writes in number 15 a beautiful idea. He says, you know what the sod is? You know what the real secret is? The real secret is that we are constantly wrapped in a beautiful and loving relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The greatest secret of all is that God is everywhere and anywhere. The greatest secret of all is that the Ribbono Shel Olam is right by our side. It's a secret because often we don't think about it, because often we don't try to see it, because often we don't contemplate it too much. But nichnasai and yotza sod, Purim is the day to reveal the sod. Purim is the day to reveal the greatest secret of all. That God is not just in the miraculous of activities, but the Ribbono Shel Olam is in anything and everything. And all we have to do is condition ourselves to see it. And how enriched our lives will be. And how much more loved we will feel knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in anything and everything in our lives. So we should be Zochem Yeretz Hashem on this Yom Tov of Purim. We should give your Mishloach Manos that you're going to keep simple and inexpensive. You're going to go ahead and give your matanos le'evyonim. You're going to give your matanos le'evyonim, which again is the most greatest of all mitzvos, to be able to help out another Jew in times of need. But most importantly, let us find the ability to maximize the opportunity to see Mashiach in this day. May be zochem yirtzeh Hashem to see the Ribono Shel Olam in anything and everything, and halavai natzuchos of seeing Kodesh Baruch Hu in anything. You know, if each of us go out of our way to see Kodesh Baruch Hu in anything and everything on the day of Purim, we know what that means. That means each of us is writing our own stanza of that Shira Chadasha. And halavai we should be zochah that our stanzas should combine. Ribono Shel Olam should put all of our individual paragraphs together to form the most beautiful Shira Chadasha. And halavai we should be zochah never to have to leave Purim again.